Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation. DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. If you enjoy a determiner, let's talk about the credits. The song written, composed, and sang by Mike Rickberg with his wife now. She wasn't when we first started 19 years ago, Sarah Cohen. That's right. Patrick Brady is doing all the tech. He does the audio and the video, and he puts it all together, and he's awesome. Vilmos is doing JackieCationStore.com, and thank you very much, Vilmos. The rest of it's on Squarespace, including DorkForest.com and TheDorkForest.com, which I just integrated into JackieCation.com. Also there, merch. There's Dork Forest t-shirts. There's all my stand-up merch, a new t-shirt and beanies, and also CDs and DVDs. If you own those devices, feel free to empty my garage. You knock yourselves out. You can see videos of different stand-up shows that I've done on the television, and you can watch a couple of my specials. Always fun. I have another podcast, The Jackie and Laurie Show, just about stand-up, but The Dork Forest is the flagship. 19th year, we're doing it. You can go to my Bandcamp. You can go to YouTube, where the videos of The Dork Forest are all hanging out, and there's a bunch of stand-up stuff as well. It is November or December of 2024, so I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest in these 2 months. Instead, you find a food bank in your town near to you and help out somebody in November and December. You can use feedingamerica.org, or you can Google the words food bank and your zip code, and a food bank will come up. I'm sure there's other things that I should be talking about. Come and see me do stand-up in November and December. Holy smokes, I'm everywhere. And JackieCation.com has all those tour dates. But who's going to dork out? Let's find out now. Hello and welcome. Jackie Cation here in Burlington, Vermont. That's right. I'm here this weekend. But this next weekend, by the way, if you're in either Hamilton, Ontario or Portland, Maine, that's where you should come. Go to JackieCation.com for ongoing, no matter what. This is my tour. It's the name of my tour now. No matter what, I'll be doing stand-up comedy, I guess. Today's guest on the Dork Forest, Matthew Broussard, well, stand-up comic, obviously. Very funny. Conan, all the things, has a new special coming out December 13th on YouTube called Hyperbolic. And if you go to his Instagram, it's Monday Punday. Pun is spelt like a pun. Monday is spelt like Monday, and P-U-N-D-A-Y. So Monday Punday, Matthew Broussard. Welcome to the show. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. A longtime listener, big fan of your stand-up, big fan of the pod.
Thanks.
Very excited to dork out.
Yeah, this is great. And it's weird that we've never met, but here we are, meeting over the virtual, what will essentially be a YouTube show itself on whatever my YouTube channel is. There you go, guys. Good luck.
I did see you live, the Maria Bamford episode at JFL. One of my favorite podcasts ever, any episode of anything for finances. What an incredible episode.
God. Oh my God, that episode. It's on the Bandcamp, you guys. Maria pulls out her contract for JFL and reads it aloud at the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. And our agent, our PA agent was standing in the back of the room, and he goes, I was just back there going, no, what are you doing? No. And then it turns out it didn't matter.
I heard.
And that's what I like about TJ Mark Walter. Yes.
Yeah, I'm with TJ or people who work with TJ, and Sheely, who I work with. I go, did you hear this episode? He goes, did I hear this episode? We had to fend off other agencies going after her. Agents heard that episode and called her and say, oh, we could get you more than that. That's all they're getting you? Come over to the wherever.
Oh, like that's sharks, insane.
Like vultures.
Yes. Right. And the thing about Maria, no one's more loyal. She's with Bruce Smith. Anyway, you guys, welcome to the program. The very lovable, very chatty Bruce Smith. Okay, so let's talk briefly about your dorkdom, Matthew Broussard. And it is
books I've never read, science fiction books. The only one that I read was the Hyperion, the first Hyperion one. And it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And so guess who didn't read the others? Oh. This one right here. But I will say Children of Time sounds kind of interesting.
It's my favorite book. Yeah.
It's your favorite book. Now, mm-hmm. written by someone named Tchaikovsky. Is that a pen name?
Well, I know the answer. His last name is Tchaikovsky, but spelt with almost every letter different. If you look at how he spells it, it's like CZ versus instead of THC, it's CZ. But it's pronounced the same. And he, I guess, anglicized it, transliterated it for this discussion right here.
So that we could have this conversation. Uh-huh. So what Matthew's done is he's picked sort of five of his favorite small series or science fiction books, and Children of Time I've never read. That's from like 2015.
Yes.
So, what's his first name? The Tchaikovsky guy?
Adrian.
Adrian, that's it. Adrian Tchaikovsky. Yeah. There's five books.
I picked five different books. They're all different authors.
It's a trilogy. Okay.
It's a trilogy for now. And I will say I hope Adrian isn't listening. Stop after Children of Time. The other two books are good, but they're not as good as Children of Time. And to me, it's a perfect standalone. He has other series that are worth going all the way in on. I would say finish Children of Time and then jump to other works by him.
Right. Because there's something, Children of Ruin or Children of...
Yeah, Children of Ruin and Memory. They're good, but that first one... Whew,
is amazing. So what is... So what is the basic plot of it? I mean, is it first person? Is it... like, because I know Hyperion is just this crazy totalitarian, you know, back in time kind of thing.
Right.
So what is Children of Time? I don't even know what that is. So that's
Children
great.
Of Time starts... So it's In terms of sci-fi, it's not space opera. It's I don't know the words, but not far future, interstellar, meager interstellar. All of basically the world has collapsed, come back again, and it's about to collapse again. And they have very limited spacefaring technology that they basically dug up. They barely know how it works. They are setting to the book opens with Evrana Kern setting. Going to a terraformed planet to basically leave some monkeys there to evolve faster due to the uplift virus. That's kind of the MacGuffin of the series. The uplift virus is kind of the one thing, the big leap. And it all goes wrong because of terrorists in the first chapter. And instead of monkeys populating the planet, spiders do. And then civilization collapses.
As had been predicted.
Uh-huh. And then I think humanity goes out looking for places to live and finds this planet that is now over generations become dominated by hyper-intelligent spiders. We get to see how basically a lot of what Tchaikovsky does is seeing how other species cultures, if other species had won the race, what their societies would look like, what their technology would look like, how we get along, how we don't. But it's very bleak, but it's somehow very hopeful at the same time. I need hope in books. I don't like too dark.
Awesome. That's amazing because that's exactly what I need, which is why I read some space opera. It's why I read. And I mean, the thing is because whenever you predict, essentially science fiction has a lot of prediction about sort of the use of power. Mm-hmm. And it's usually pretty negative. It turns out absolute power can be abused. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And what I like about science fiction is it talks about the resistance and it talks about how power could be used for good too. So that's kind of cool that the spider beings who have been uplifted or essentially genetically, because what happens is they drop the monkeys off and they're going to drop the monkeys off with this sort of genetic modifier that's supposed to speed up evolution. Mm-hmm. Instead of just dropping off people.
Yes.
I mean, I don't understand why they didn't just grab a couple hundred pioneers. But they're like, no, let's just let evolution happen so that nobody has to be inconvenienced.
Right. And we have a working class when we arrive. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Pretty and, dark. Right. And then the woman scientist who puts herself into stasis, essentially, kind of goes nuts or something. I just read the back.
Yes.
And so when they do show up, the people, to check out how the spiders are essentially what happened with that planet. When they send the uplift thing, is it terraforming as well to make it habitable for humans, or was it already sort of having an oxygenated planet?
It was terraformed already. I can't remember if they already found it. I think they had already terraformed it. Either way, when everything was dropped off, it was pretty much good to go. It was a harsh wilderness.
And already
habited by a lot of, I think, yeah, they'd already, that's why spiders were already there, I think. I can't remember exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they show up twice. Is a spoiler. The first time they show up, they don't stick around too long.
Oh, right. Well, fair enough. Okay. Now, Project Hail Mary, another chipper one. Let's go into that. There was another Adrian book that you picked.
Yes.
Was it Dogs of War?
Dogs of War and Bearhead, the sequel. So Adrian's on a real hot streak right now. He's been really killing it for about 10 years. This duology did not get the press it deserved. A lot of his other works are getting, you know, they're Hudson News, you know, top shelf kind of, people are really starting to get the message about how good this guy is and how prolific.
Yeah.
This series just didn't get the, I don't know who he published it with, but I would say if you're a sci-fi reader already, give this one a go. You might not find it on your recommended lists. It's quick. It's, I love sci-fi as a genre. It usually lacks female perspective and it usually lacks some human depth sometimes. I don't mind that. This book has a bit more of he's getting a lot better at the real heart jerking. Like, this book made me cry. It's just a good dog book. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause Dogs of War is sort of like anthropomorphized or like genetically modified animals that have been sort of turned into warriors of some sort. Mm-hmm. Right. Or
right. Weapons.
Just, yeah, they've sort of weaponized it, but they've also smartened them up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or made them able to communicate with humans. I don't know if that's smarter or not.
Yeah. but it's similar to the Dobby arc in the House Elf arc in Harry Potter.
In Harry Potter?
Where they are so predisposed towards serving others that even though it's a funny thing, very much like Hermione, where they want these dogs, these weapon dogs and these weapon animals, that people want them to have independence, but ultimately they don't want independence for themselves. Life is harder when they have to choose. They would rather serve a master, even if it's a morally corrupt master.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they have to sort of be forced into a freedom, and then
what does freedom look like for someone who doesn't want freedom?
Right. That message is very interesting and incredibly arrogant. Holy shit.
Yeah. And especially this week.
Yeah. Especially. Yeah. It's your body, my choice. Fuck you, buddy.
Yeah.
That's interesting because the back of the book that I read on that one was that they essentially work for, or they are the property of, they're the strike team of a mercenary guy who is their boss and their master and their and he just wants to be a good dog, this main dog, and there's also a bear and hilariously a swarm of bees, and the mercenary himself is brought before a tribunal or whatever because of war crimes. And then they want to put down his team who have been AI generated and made smarter. And, the crazy thing is, at which point they're like, oh, well, we don't want to be killed. Mm-hmm. So they kind of go rogue. Now, I don't know. All I know is that Bearhead comes back several generations later with one of the characters and sort of as a in sort of AI form, just as sort of part of a.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No physical man. I forgot the physical manifestation in that book. Yes. But it's weird because I read the book and you feel connected with this character as if it was, I forgot that it has no corporeal form, but that's how. Yeah.
Right. So Bearhead is something else generations later with, and also kind of revolutionary. And it's, that is interesting. Now I will say comparably, And Rangers of the Dork Forest know that I've read this. These are books that I read consistently. Just reread. Do you reread these books on a fair amount of?
I've read Children of Time twice. Or actually, I've only ever embarrassing to me, but I've only ever listened to Children of Time. I really to read. Yeah, I really try to read. I'm not good at it, but I don't have. I'm not a good reader.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing about audiobooks. It's you know why our parents read to us? Because it's fun.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's nice to have someone read you a story. What I tend to do, though, hilariously, is I tend to be reading a book. I tend to be listening to a book. And I tend to have backup books on my Kindle. Because I like the first time I read a book, I like to read it in paper.
Yes.
Just because it's easier on my eyes for some reason.
Yes.
So when I reread, I can just skim and then get to the parts that I really liked.
Yeah.
And then I like to listen to it because since I tend to skim, like the first time I read a book, I'm not even kidding. I just want to hear. I just want the story, man. I just want the plot. Let's get to the end. Let's see that the good guys won. Let's see that the good guys lost. I won't read it again if the good guys lost. I'm so sorry. I don't know who bought Schindler's List, but I'm never watching that movie again. It was incredibly well done. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. Why would you buy the DVD? Okay, so we can sit around on a Sunday. So, but the
I'm too happy. I want to feel worse today.
Exactly. I want to be, I mean, I like that he rose to the occasion and he saved as many people as he could. And it's what we all have to do, but for crying out loud. But there is a series that I've read and listened to and have on Kindle that's written by a woman named Lois McMaster Bujold. And it is space opera. It is essentially Star Wars. And, the main character is this guy, and one of the stories is about he's a mercenary, and his job is the planet he's a mercenary, but he's also working for his empire, his planet, and he does mercenary stuff, but he also does he's on task to go get this scientist from a very very Vegas-y kind of Cuba 1950 kind of place where there are no rules. You can get whatever you want. They'll genetically modify anything you like. You can launder money. There's people that if there's been a kidnapping in your family, they'll get them back. All you have to do is pay the ransom and their fee. And they have a very good percentage rate of getting your loved one back. So congratulations. And so like, there's sort of like the factory town that I grew up in when I was a kid, Cyrus Erie made strip mining equipment. And in the mid-70s, they started making reclamation equipment. So they created their own industry. Very beautiful. They're now owned by Caterpillar. Okay, but here's the scoop. What is the name of that book? But it's a Vorkosigan. It's a... So whatever it is, the reason I bring it up is because the Dogs of War and Bearhead, he goes to get this scientist who is... wants to essentially defect because he didn't know that he was going to be, he just wanted sort of the freedom to genetically modify whatever the fuck he wanted to. And he was like, oh, I have some morals. And so he's like, let's go where I could probably still, I mean, they're still pretty fluid, their morals, but slightly better. Then Jackson's Hole is the name of the name of the planet is Jackson's Hole. And, Miles Vorkosigan ends up meeting this genetically modified soldier dog, but it's a wolf and it's a wolf woman whose IQ is at 130 and she's never been treated as a person. For some reason they wanted a 7'7" grunt with a lot of intelligence. And you're like, well, that's an error. What you want is someone who's biddable, kind of like the Dogs of War, someone who has, you know, and so she was like, I don't wanna. And, but she didn't know any better. So whatever, he ends up recruiting her into his team because that's what he does. He tends to save people. And that's the other thing I like about the Vorkosigan series is that the heart of it is sort of community. And, but there's also great, I mean, you know, it's Han Solo flying back and going, let's finish this. And then, and then they're a family. So that's my favorite part, but
I gotta check that out.
Yeah, it's she's great. And then so the Hyperion Cantos is all five of those books plus the novellas, right?
It's four. It's a pair of duologies. It's two and two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I read the first one with the Shrike and the aging backwards people.
Yes.
How does that one go? I forget what the plot was.
The Canterbury Tales. It's Chaucer, I believe.
Is it?
Yes, the whole thing is framed around that, which I have not read, but they say if you've read it, it is almost the exact same blueprint. What's interesting is it's set up as a series of basically, I think, six or seven stories based on each character. All these characters are on this trip together. They're on a spaceship together. They've all been assembled to go to this place where this evil being and time moves backwards and all of the, I forget what the fate of the universe depends on it, and they're all going there. And you hear all their backstories. And I will say the first book is not very satisfying. It's just spooky and atmospheric and incredible world building. It's my favorite space opera in that it's Galactic Empire. It's sprawling Galactic Empire. So decently far future. No real aliens to speak of, sparsely populated galaxy for now. Very decent. My rules with sci-fi is sci-fi isn't fantasy, and I hate when they conflate. This series is a little bit of the science is so good it's almost fantasy, but okay. It's so exciting. It's not like the most enriching read, but boy is it fun. It's kind of that Star Wars thrill. It's just so over the top and campy and exciting. The second book gets really good. The third book is great. The fourth book falls off, but that second and third book finish the duology at least. The second book really pays off because it stops being that weird, seven stories intertwined. It just starts becoming plot and action.
Right, right. Because, if I remember correctly, that first Hyperion book, they're sort of all trapped in it's like they're all trapped in that storytelling pub Sandman or something, you know, sort of the Neil Gaiman thing, because they're all telling their reasons for going to the wizard, and the wizard you find out is a real jerkweed, man.
Yeah.
And is the second book they get, because I believe at the end of the first book they just get there.
It goes wild in the second book. It goes to the moon. They go everywhere. I can't remember the plot. It was just all over the place. And there's three or four pages towards the end of the book where you'll read everything. Yeah, the fall is an unbelievable chapter.
And you listen to them on audio? Did you?
I really try to read. So what I do is I'm not a good reader. I've just recently really started trying to read. It's more difficult for me than for a lot of people. I will often read the book while listening to the book at the same time. That helps me comprehend.
Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah. I bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is once I read the book, if I listen to the audiobook, I'm like, oh, weird. That's what happened. And Andy reads, and he reads not very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'll tell you this, when he's done reading a book, that book has been read.
Yeah.
That book has been comprehended.
Yeah.
I cannot say the same. I am like, oh, interesting. What happened? And then, but that's the great thing about the reread, because then I can reread and I can enjoy it a different part of it, essentially a second time and, or a third time or a fourth time. And so what's the second duology about? It takes place later, if I remember correctly.
Jumps forward. So something very big happens at the end of book two and there's still some unanswered questions. And it jumps forward and you find a new protagonist, right? Maybe even two new protagonists a world that has been in a galaxy that has new leadership and new travel/physics. And things are pretty, at the beginning of the second duology, things are pretty clamped down. And the Shrike is back, but we don't know what he's doing this time around. The Shrike is such a good villain. Shrike might be the most ominous, potent villain.
He's super ominous, and I will say that because of that ominousness, he made me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what bad guy is just a bad guy, and I'm like, I'm willing to watch this go to the end. Probably Darth Vader, because he's just a guy in a suit.
Mm-hmm.
and I was like, yeah, that guy, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And but the Shrike is definitely, he's imposing, mm-hmm. and he's mysterious. And
doesn't
so you
speak.
Don't actually know what his powers are.
Right.
And all of that thing. So it's, yeah, so it's pretty difficult. Yeah. Okay.
That's the oldest sci-fi I'm a fan of. So I really like the new stuff. I really like everything. People talk about sci-fi. I really like the last 10 years. I think we are in a really great three-body problem. I think sci-fi is a thing that aged, kind of like comedy. It's the old stuff just won't be – things age out. We didn't predict social media. We didn't predict cell phones. It's hard to consider a future without
right.
those.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you ever read Time Machine, H.G. Wells.
No.
But you have to suspend a great deal. You have to take it in perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, weirdly enough, Frankenstein holds up. Huh. Dracula holds up.
Yeah.
H.G. Wells time travel thing, you just have to go, all right. And same with C.S. Lewis and his space mm-hmm. trilogy. Mm-hmm. Because C.S. Lewis's space trilogy, which was written in like 48 or 49, it predicted that the spaceships had to be tiny Earths that would spin so greatly and the core would be so dense that there could be gravity. Otherwise, how could you get into space? And how could you live in, you know? And yeah. so the science is, it's more fantasy. You might not even like it just because of that. And the space trilogy, by the way, is literally just, as far as I'm concerned, it's a better description of why God created, because, you know, C.S. Lewis is very religious. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he was Catholic or if it was Anglican, but whatever it is, it's Christianity. And his description of why the universe is what it is mm-hmm. and space travel and the reason why Earth has, why we think for centuries that we were the center of the universe is actually a better, for me, a better explanation of sort of the fall of Eden than the mm-hmm. Bible. Mm-hmm. Like it's better than that. It helped mm-hmm. me, because I don't have a problem with God. A lot of people were raised with a very pejorative, angry, mean God. There's mm-hmm. part of me that believes the Lord of the Rings is real. So it's not, you know, I don't have a problem believing in something bigger than myself. So even if it's just science and the universe and the fucking wind. Anyway, so but that's interesting that you think the last have you read Kamau Bell's cousin, who won 3 Hugos in a row, N.K. Jemisin, the Broken Earth trilogy?
Yes. I hope I never run into her after she hears this. I found that book to be fantasy parading a sci-fi. So it wasn't totally my cup of tea.
Oh, because it was a little magical?
It was, it was a little more magical. I didn't realize that was they were cousins. That was
it. Oh, yeah.
That
is a cheat. First cousins, I think.
Wow, she is incredibly successful. She is really killing it. And
An extraordinary writer. The prose is great.
Mm-hmm. And the world building is crazy. Yeah.
Epic. Yeah, it's incredibly dense and beautiful. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the books that I read the first that trilogy. What I loved about that trilogy mm-hmm. was that she finished it and then published the first one. She didn't finish a book, publish it. Write the second book, publish it. Third book, publish it. She wrote the whole story and then published it. And I have this to say, Patrick Rothfuss, who I hope I never meet again if he's heard this, fucking finish the trilogy.
Finish
George
it,
R. I mean, I'm not alone. The guff that him and Martin have gotten, I get it. So
I've heard if Rothfuss could land that ship, he would be up there with Sanderson. But people are like, yeah, don't start it because we don't know if it ends. And I'm really sick of these.
Right.
Yeah. So many Hugos and Nebulas now go out to the first book of a trilogy. And it's like, are we giving awards for riddles for the setup? Like, what are we doing? Like, I didn't know that about N.K. Jemisin because I remember the first book won awards. I was like, well, it's a great setup. And then she obviously landed that. Like, it came around. It all wrapped up.
The second book won the Hugo. Mm-hmm. The third book, all three of them won the Hugo mm-hmm. 3 years in a row.
Yeah, that was
amazing.
So back to Tchaikovsky. Children of Time was, I mean, I think it was, so he did a, I could just do this whole episode on Adrian Tchaikovsky. He was like he had some desk job. So he majored in, I think, zoology. So he's got this great evolutionary science background. It's what he really focuses on is animals. He, based on his writing, really knows some astrophysics. So I get really tied up in the astrophysics of it. How do they work around, you know, faster than light travel or time dilation or sending messages? And that's like if Star, that's why I hate Star Wars.
Degree in math as Applied well, math. Don't you?
Aren't yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like physics. But like Star Wars is trash. Like I'm a bit of a sci-fi snob. You're like, I love Star Wars. I'm like, that's fantasy. They just go right. between stars in a day. Yeah. That's not physically possible.
No. I mean, it's a lot of Andy's friends work for JPL and are work with NASA and stuff. And they're just like, you have to say, I like science fiction and then I like sword and sorcery fantasy. And if you like both of them, it could be like, I like mystery novels and I also like thrillers. You know, I like, you know, Jack Reacher novels, but how does he know where everybody went? Like he's in New York City. He would have gone downtown. Would he have? What are you, a dog? There's no way for you to know that he went left instead of right. But for some reason, Jack Reacher knows. So, I mean, it's interesting that the fiction that you like is fiction based on fact, right?
Yes.
Like you read nonfiction as well.
Do you like to read nonfiction? Yeah. Yeah. A little. Yeah. My favorite nonfiction work is a book called The Song Machine. It's a very great listen. It's quick. It's why Swedish guys write all the pop songs you hear on the radio. The history of that. It's fantastic.
Okay.
It's great.
That's cool.
It's really great. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Okay. So, but Tchaikovsky, he was a scientist before he became a fiction writer.
He studied zoology. Yeah.
Okay. And that's what, and hence his mashup.
Yes. And his fantasy series lean heavy on animal identities.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, and he tries to make it as plausible as possible. Did you, I only saw this. I did not read the book, the Martian one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's Hail Mary is the same author. The Martian and Project Hail Mary are the same author. And that's Andy Weir, who I got to meet for a podcast, who is, top five authors for me. And he's only written three books and he is already in the Hall of Fame for sci-fi, by most readers' opinions. So Martian was great. I remember I read it in like 2 days, and I'm such a slow reader. The second book, I don't recommend. He tried to write it.
Okay.
The first Martian is clearly written. He's the main character. There's some of these authors where they're the main character every time. You're like, good. I think I know you based on this character, or at least it feels that way. The second book, he tried to write from the perspective of a female teenager, and with a little disrespect.
That's a learned skill, my friend. Yeah.
On your second outing. And he felt like he was trying to write a movie. And you know, props to him. Sometimes people are afraid to write a screenplay. So they write a book, you know, and that was what he was doing here. And then the third book, Project Hail Mary, he came back to his roots and said, well, what if I did The Martian, but better? And buddy, he nailed it. It's a masterpiece. It's simple. It's technical and tedious in the way I like, but that would not be off-putting to most people. The characters are robust. It is the first book. I wish we had started with that, because when people say, oh, I'm interested in sci-fi, I say, start with that.
Okay.
It's an entry level. It is an entry level sci-fi book that even sci-fi snobs would go, that's a damn good book. It's like Nate Bargatze.
Why is that?
You know, where it's like anyone can enjoy this, but comics sit in the back of the room going, damn, he's good.
Okay, what is it? So tell me sort of the synopsis. What's the log line? What are we talking about, Hail Mary?
It's near future. So you could probably, I think the book starts in maybe present day, maybe within the first 50 years.
And it's a Hail Mary pass, essentially,
yes.
Right?
Yes, Project Hail Mary. Okay. Dr. Grace, what's his first name? His last name is Grace. I forget his first name.
Okay.
But Hail Mary, and then he it's called Project Hail Mary is the name of the vessel. He is on the vessel, so it's Hail Mary full of grace. There are lots of Beatles references in this book.
Okay.
If you know the Beatles. The sun is going out, and because of a interstellar bacteria virus that I believe it is powered by neutrinos, I think. So there's some very interesting particle physics and very interesting xenobiology of what could life look like, not on other planets, but between other stars. It's taking out our sun. We have to fly somewhere else. And there's very few people who can do it, and they have to put together the ship. And Grace wakes up on this ship.
Together a team? They put together a team to go figure out. Isn't it something like there's a sun that's attainable, like they can get there.
Yeah.
That is not suffering from this, that they seem to have been able to figure out a way to fight it.
Something like that. They have to go to another star to figure out how to fix this. And we've already introduced one of the most. Yes. Yeah. We've already introduced one of the more innovative xenobiologies in all of sci-fi, the astrophage. And then spoiling it a little bit, we then meet maybe the second most interesting xenobiology I have encountered. He runs into someone out there, and this is basically a buddy comedy. From there, it's just two characters and their relationship.
Oh, that's cool.
And so another,
that does sound incredibly likable. Like if you wanted to read a fun book about science and science fiction and stuff like that, Hail Mary. And it's Andy Weir.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he is the main character. It's a middle school science teacher thrust into circumstances he is not prepared for. And what I like about the xenobiology of this is I get annoyed. I mean, another thing that makes Star Wars awful is we go to other planets. The oxygen's breathable. The gravity's manageable. They speak at a volume we can hear. They use eyesight, and they have the five senses we have. And this is one of the better instances of, let's throw all that out the window. What is the most incompatible form of life with ours? And how could we bridge that gap? Different chemistry, different heat, different pressure, different gravity. What might they have discovered that we haven't? And what might we have discovered that they haven't?
Right. Okay. And
it's just a good book. I'll probably read it again.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I did see that it has been optioned, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, it's
Ryan
going.
Gosling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan Gosling's going to play the, I guess, likable middle school teacher. Could you imagine writing a book and then Ryan Gosling plays you?
Yeah.
And
can you imagine a geeky sci-fi author writes himself as the main character, basically, and now Ryan Gosling? Now Ken is playing you.
Right. It's makes perfect sense. Is Ryan Gosling the Ken? I get the Ryans mixed up. Same with the Chris's.
Yes.
Okay. Because who plays Deadpool?
That's Ryan Reynolds.
Thank you very much. When I read Ryan Gosling as playing Grace, I thought in my head, Ryan Reynolds.
That's fair.
Anyway, so, and then when you said buddy movie, I was like, oh, Ryan Reynolds. And, but nope. Ryan Gosling, who was also funny, who could also do
they
comedy.
Funny.
He was in the
they
Fall
are funny. It's
guy,
annoying.
I think, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow. All right. Well, you guys, we're just halfway through. Let me just tell you that I'm talking here with Matthew Broussard, who is at Monday Punday. It'll be in the notes. That's his handle on Instagram and all that. He has a new comedy special coming out December 13th on YouTube called Hyperbolic. Will it also be an album?
Yes.
Okay, good. So you could also listen to it. Feel free to buy it and not stream it or do it. Because $10 is $10 and we all want it. So there you go, Matthew Broussard. So let's see. We only have a couple more books and then I guess we could talk about you carving Pokemon polymers. Anyway, what is Seven Neves? What is it?
Seven Eves.
Seven Eves. Wow. Reading, not my strong suit. Seven Eves.
They didn't have to make it one word. If you split it into two words, you'll know where the
name
comes
helped.
From.
Yes, please. Thank you very much. Okay. So what's Seven Eves?
So have you read any Neal Stephenson?
Yes. Yes. Zodiac is actually my favorite, which is weird.
Okay.
It's a deep cut, you guys. It's not a lot of people like Snowbound. I get it.
Snow Crash.
I like Snow Crash. That was it.
Snowbound. Yeah. So Snow Crash is kind of what people know him for, which is like, it was a book I read and I repeatedly would stop reading and flip to the jacket and go, there's no way it was written that in the year. I think it was written like 93 or 91. And you read the book and it was...
He invented the word internet, didn't he? Was it
Metaverse
create-
and Avatar. He was likely the coinage came from him or around that. The Matrix probably spun out from Snow Crash. It's a very fun book. It's very playful. It's a little faster than most of his books. Very stylish, almost like a Tarantino film. Just like over the top characters.
Yeah, Zodiac was. I really liked Zodiac a lot, mm-hmm. because it was sort of one of those destination. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to go blow up this building so that, you know, essentially, mm-hmm. you got to blow up the dam so Frozen 2. Anyway, mm-hmm. so the people can, you know, it's just like Zodiac, just like Frozen 2, Matthew. A lot of people don't know that. Anyway, I'm sure he would be so psyched that I've compared it. Anyway, that's so funny. What's Seven Eves?
Yeah, so Seven Eves, I guess it's from 2015-ish. It's okay. I'm otherwise not the biggest Neal Stephenson fan. I read Cryptonomicon. He tends to be long-winded, but very smart and go really in-depth on whatever he – like, oh, Cryptonomicon's from 2002. And I felt so smart carrying around – it's 900 pages. I love walking around with a book, this thick tome with this dark – looming, brooding cover. And I remember right. I set it down on the table at a comedy club and a girl goes, oh, are you reading that? I go, yeah. She goes, so is it about crypto? I was like, no, I'm not that douchebag. But then I read the book and then it kind of, I believe from what I can tell, Cryptonomicon might've been one of the inspirations for cryptocurrency. It's all about using cryptanalysis to, you know, throughout the book, they start to build a currency. They don't call it crypto. Ah. They don't talk about blockchain, but like, I imagine the people who started that cypherpunk yeah. movement were inspired by Neil. But Seven Eves is in modern day. The moon is suddenly split apart into pieces. We don't know why. And those pieces are now floating around, colliding into smaller and smaller pieces. And scientists realize that they will all fall to Earth and heat up the temperature of the globe to unlivable conditions. And everyone will die. And they need to build arcs and send people into space. Well, they will wait in orbit for thousands of years before they come back down. And it starts out with that whole process.
Yeah. Okay.
And spoiler alert.
Okay. Seven.
They're in the space station while Earth burns very okay. quickly. And how do they pick people? Who ends up there? How do they get along? And that's the more disturbing part of the book is. You would think with this threat, they could all yep. unite, but no. Individuals will act selfishly at the expense of humanity and not just survive, but be rewarded.
I'm told that that's the message of The Walking Dead. Not about zombies, that it's entirely about community and it's about politics and mm-hmm. it's about the use of power. Because I don't enjoy, for me, I'm not a huge fan of zombie stories, because there is only two ends, as far as I'm mm-hmm. concerned, scientifically. Mm-hmm. Either zombieism is cured or everyone becomes a zombie. Those are the only two ends. So I have never been a fan. But
Shaun of the Dead broke that.
Shaun of the Dead?
Shaun of the Dead, at the end, they have zombies as pets. Which
his
is buddy my favorite
is,
zombie.
Is in the shed. And yeah. So. Yeah. They sort of cure it is mm-hmm. what they do, because that's the only thing you can do. You can either cure it or everyone, because if zombies keep being created or everyone's dead because everyone, mm-hmm. you eventually run out of food if all they eat are brains.
Right.
But so it turns out zombie stories might not be about zombieism.
Right.
And I might want to grow the fuck up. Yeah. Anyway, so because
it's funny
reason
to reduce all zombie stories to a will they, won't they romance.
Yes, there's no, that's, I don't have to do this vaccine. It doesn't have to turn into a story of vaccination.
Yeah. But yeah, the villain is each other. The villain, there was a great sketch I saw, almostfriday.tv. We're making fun of, what's the Spores one? Last of Us or whatever.
Okay.
And they're doing a parody about it. Like, we're going to kill you. And they're like, wow, it's almost like the real bad guy isn't the zombies. It's other people.
Yes, which... Yeah. Is that what Seven Eves? I mean, you just sort of have to sort of figure out how to live together and wait.
Yeah, there's a villain in that book, and it's haunting because the implications for it's a villain that is scary in our own world. Without the moon falling apart, you're like, that is scarier than the moon falling apart. That person succeeding, and that person always existing, even when only seven humans are left in all of existence, that is one of them. That is a terrifying notion that can't be snuffed out. That it is something in human nature that will always appear.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting about science fiction and stand-up comedy, the Nostradamus kind of vibe to it, where you just sort of, because in science fiction, if you're an amazing art, my opinion about really great storytelling is that it's predictive, but it's also, it's so insightful into what is out there that, that's why I think that's why there's part of me that believes the Lord of the Rings is real. I don't think anybody's that good.
Oh, you know, yeah.
I don't think that, I think that those stories exist somewhere and, you know, I'm a giant hippie skippy, you know, whatever. So let's go buy a crystal. No, people give them to me. I don't purchase them, but I'm told, amethyst is great. Anyway. How big is it? The seven eaves.
It's thick. It's a thick boy.
He does run long.
Yeah. It's two books and everyone says it should have been two books. So what I described is the first half of the book. The second half of the book is crazy. You can imagine where they go, but the first, like after you get to the middle of the book, set it down and take a breath and then pick it back up because it starts even more electric from there. Terrible ending. Mostly agreed upon to be a pretty bad ending to this book.
Okay.
And still one of my favorite books. The second quarter and third quarter make it a great series. And you won't be mad putting it down, but you're like, oh, that's on a science level. That was a crazy little thing they pulled right there.
Okay. Fair enough.
But
on a science level, it's not a great ending is what you're saying. Little spoiler alert.
Something that Tchaikovsky did in Children of Time is reminiscent of what Stevenson did with Seven Eves and Children of Time. You have these spiders and they evolve, right? But how do you become invested in a species? You become invested in characters. So it's this brilliant device as every chapter you meet Portia and her friend, I forget the friend's name, who is a spider, and you see them as hunters. Now you get to the next chapter. Portia's dead, obviously. We're watching thousands of generations, but Portia is reincarnated. Now we meet another Portia, and they're a little more evolved, and they're built, they have language now, and they have structures. And then you know, you skip another chapter, and here you meet Portia and her friend again. So they're using, you know, reincarnation in a narrative device format. So you become invested in the evolution of a species as if it's a singular character.
Okay.
It's really
fascinating.
Neat. Yeah. Because you're like, you want it. Evolution is very interesting, but like, it's a very dry thing to observe. And yet you get to, it's dramatic.
Right, it's a slow boat. So you have to definitely try to figure out how to use it correctly.
Yeah.
Interesting. I love that.
And Seven Eves, this will spoil it a little bit. You have seven eaves. You can maybe guess what that means. And then you want to see what happens in the future. So how do you preserve these seven characters you know and love, but now we're long past their lifespan? They've been dead for a long time. Well, you make each of those seven characters into races. And now you're in a world where there are seven races that are the seven characters you know. And you see their personalities distributed amongst the seven tribes of humanity.
Okay.
It's a very great device in preserving interesting. How do you take these big leaps forward in time and keep people interested in the characters? And these are two brilliant ways. Two of my favorite authors have done that.
Yeah, he is actually just an incredible author with just his mind. Have you ever read any Ian Banks?
No, he's on my list. No, right. he's from what I understand, hardcore sci-fi, like top. Yeah.
Right. It's like if Gibson were alive in the 2000s, you know, I mean, it's much more, I like Gibson and I didn't mind Heinlein, though obviously would desperately like to sleep with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And, but it's your book, you do whatever you want, Robert. Mm-hmm. And so, but Ian Banks, and I've literally read one book of his, and
which one?
Andy has read a great deal of them, but I would recommend this one as a good starter to introduce you to, I've read more than one actually, but Player of Games. It's the only one I can remember. And it's essentially about part of the culture, one of the empires in the culture, or possibly the main empire. I can't remember. the way they take over new planets is they sort of infiltrate and they come up from the bottom where they, so that it's peaceful in most cases. And so they need, they want to take over this planet. And the way this planet is structured is they play this game. And there's a game that is played at every level of class, at every class, from street urchins to the president of the world, to the to the head of the world. And whoever can win that game becomes the head of that world. And there is a game designer, and my husband's a game designer. So Andy's a game designer. So it's one of the reasons why he was like, it's just, it's if this player of games is recruited by his government to go win this game. And he's like, I don't want to. And the thing about the culture community itself, the world that is the culture, resources are no longer a problem. AI has evolved to sentient ships and and there is sentience in the AI. But it's all personality driven anyway. It might be a little too fantastical for you, but the story is extraordinary. And it's essentially about this guy who has to go play this game and beat the emperor in this game that is played at every level. And so we examine this, this culture of this one planet, because if he can win, if he can beat the emperor, he can sort of make an executive decision to join the empire. And it could be peaceful. And it, and that's how they sell it to them. They're like, otherwise, we'll just go take it. So
I do like that. Yeah. I do like intellect. I like seeing intellect succeed. I like a system where intelligence is the factor by which society deems people leaders, because we don't live in that world. And I would like to live. I'm a bit of a technocrat. I would like to see more of that in American culture. So that sounds hopeful to me.
See that. Yeah, I see that. It's by the way, I am talking with Matthew Broussard. He has a new album and special coming out December 13th. It's called Hyperbolic. It'll be on YouTube. His Instagram and such is Monday Punday, and it'll be in the notes. So we only have like 10 minutes left. So but here's my what are you reading now? Is there anything that you're reading now or listening to now that
I was tempted to put it on the list, but We Are Legion, We Are Bob. It's the Bobiverse series. It's great. It's very much it's if you like Andy Weir, if you like The Martian and Project Hail Mary, this is almost a direct continuation of that style, that voice. A nerdy guy who is writing a nerdy book. It's very fast. And you mentioned resource plentiful. It's rare among books I've read where the main character is almost infinitely powerful, and there's almost kind of not that much conflict for him. Kind of anything, he'll never die. He can go wherever. He can create unlimited copies of himself. He's almost benevolent, and he's nearly omniscient. So how is it interesting? It still is.
And it's called what?
Bobiverse.
Bobiverse. And the author?
What's his name? Dennis Taylor? Dennis E. Taylor? But newer guy, maybe last 10 years. He kind of did it all on it. It's very DIY. The books are thin and like flimsy cover, kind of cheap print because he just wanted to print it however he could. And it's had massive success. It's also unique in that I've never seen either sci-fi is near future, and we build up to small scale interstellar travel and civilization, or space opera. We already have a galactic empire and it's set up, and we drop into that world. I've never seen something go from right now, present day, people like you and me having coffee, and within three books we're galactic empire running into other spacefaring civilizations battling. And then I know it goes to five books, and I think by the fifth book, we're going into black holes and potentially, I imagine, intergalactic, which is a real big scale. So to go step by step, no gaps, no gaps at all. These books go from like the books continue as if the first chapter might as well be the next chapter of the previous book. And Good science.
He's just writing. Yeah, he's just good science.
Good science.
Seems all pretty plausible. Okay.
Yeah. Limitations on, you know, there's no slower than it's slower than light travel. They find instantaneous communications, which is some books do that. You could argue that is bad physics, that there's no such thing as instantaneous across large distances. But yeah. One thing I'll say about the book, you were talking about, I am an atheist, but this is a book about a guy who wakes up where his brain is now just a consciousness. That is part of a spaceship that he can go anywhere and his mind, basically he can expand his mind. He has abilities to just keep creating, harvest whole, solar systems and build more of himself. And he arrives at a solar system with a Stone Age level, civilization of bat pig humanoids. And he wants to help. He sees they're about to go extinct. There's only 300 of them. And he wants to help him out because obviously we want to meet other civilizations who have come up along our track. So he has to help him out. So he starts killing some of their bad guys and teaching him bows and arrows. And he literally comes down to the planet and says, I'm going to help you guys out for a few generations. Make sure you don't go extinct. And at some point he has to say, he has to step back and, you know, not help so directly. And at some point he has to disappear. And let them do their own thing, but he can't let them go extinct. And I'm like, I believe in God a little bit. Because why did God come down and help? Why would God come down and help us and tell us these things and then disappear and leave no trace? Because God wants to see us become like him or her.
And you don't want to micromanage forever. Maybe God is just like, no, I got other projects.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's other things to do. And it just depends entirely how you define God. Like if I just define God as essentially not me. Like I have to, there's things that I cannot do. So I have to let them the fuck go. So whether or not it's science or any power greater than myself is going to be the God of my understanding. And sometimes it's the God of my childhood. Sometimes it's a Roman pantheon and sometimes it's a fucking tree. So nothing to do with me, quite honestly. All I know is I just do my job, keep going and try not to despair. In other news, that's a weird place to stop. But turning to weather. Yeah, this has been fascinating. I just I think that's a good place to stop though, because that's awesome. I wish I were reading a new science fiction book, but I'm not. I'm mostly just reading mysteries right now, and that's a different episode, Rangers. So what we've done is we've spent an hour with Matthew Broussard. Hyperbolic comes out December 13th. It's at Monday Punday. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you very much.
Buy the album. Throw him some cash. Go see him live. And take you Rangers. You know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, it was fascinating because it was with Matthew Broussard, whose handle, by the way, is Monday Punday, P-U-N-D-A-Y.
Monday Punday. Nice.
That's his handle on Instagram and stuff. He has a new album coming out, new special on December 13th, Hyperbolic. He has a degree in mathematics.
Oh, okay.
And also sculpts Pokemon polymers as a side dorkdom that we could have talked about.
Sculpting Pokemon like out of polymer clay?
Out of polymer. Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like Sculpey. So,
yeah. And so he is a comic and he likes science fiction, but he likes a science-y science fiction.
Oh, he likes the hard science fiction. That's good.
Right. I told him about Ian Banks and
not quite as hard science. That is really more social science fiction.
But it's not fantasy. It's not like...
No, it's not fantasy in space.
Right.
Like Star Wars is fantasy in space.
He has a hard time with Star Wars a little bit, with the math and science of it. And I'm like, over here, just suspending disbelief right and left.
That's
so,
right. So he probably really enjoyed, like, The Expanse.
Oh, you know what? I didn't bring up The Expanse. I should have brought up The Expanse.
Oh,
but
okay.
He picked,
I'm surprised
like five...
he didn't bring up The Expanse.
He did not. It was interesting. We talked about this Children of Time series.
Okay. Interesting.
And he said that the first one's good. The other two, just okay. Yeah. But he said it was, but sometimes that is the way with.
That is sometimes the way.
But the same author has a, instead of a trilogy, a duology. Oh. And he is definitely one of our people because he used the word duology.
Right. That's
and,
true.
Instead of saying there's just two of them.
There's just two books. Right.
Last night on stage, I didn't call them traffic lights. I called them stop and go lights. Oh. And then I just stared at the audience and I said, well, you can take somebody out of South Milwaukee, but you can't really get all of South Milwaukee out of her. And they were all sort of very sort of serious, dystopian. We're going into space. We're going to fix this. The Dogs of War Bearhead one sounded kind of interesting. It's sort of anthropomorphized. Remember that? Okay. Was it? It wasn't called Top Gun. What was the one with the
Probably
dogs? The comic book Alan Moore.
Yeah.
Top something.
What was it? Top 10.
Yeah. Top 10. That was it. But it's sort of that. But it was. They were all. It was a team. Dogs of War is a team of. Of anthropomorphized, there's a dog, there's a swarm of bees, and there's possibly a spider. And they work for a mercenary, and the mercenary is brought before a tribunal because of war crimes. And then they want to put down the animals because they put them to work, but the animals are like, wait, we're actually sentient.
We're just following orders.
Just following orders, a classic.
Oh,
and then
this is what they see. What they've done?
What have they done?
He's created an excuse where just following orders seems like a good thing because they're just animals,
right? And they're
good sentient animals. So if they're sentient animals, then they get they should
be held accountable.
They should be held accountable,
right? And then Bearhead is like the sequel, but it's set in the far future, and I don't know how any of these books end, by the way. They all sound pretty grim.
Right.
Project Hail Mary is the guy, Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And so Project Hail Mary, going to be a movie with the guy who played Ken, the Ryan who played Ken.
All right.
And it was fascinating. The five books, the Hyperion series and something called Seven Eves.
Right. Simmons' Hyperion series.
Oh, right. I've only read the first one, and it creeped me out so hard I had to stop.
Well,
he said the second one is the best one.
It's Canticle for Leibowitz in space. Not Canticle for Leibowitz. It's
Canterbury Tales.
Canterbury Tales in space.
Why is that? I read the Canterbury Tales, but I don't remember.
Because it's everybody going to this place, and while they're going to this place, they're telling the story of why they're going to this place. Then they each get to tell their story.
Remember the stories from Canterbury Tales. I forget that they were they all sitting around or were they all in a caravan?
I think they must have been in a caravan, I think. Yeah.
What's it's a restaurant at the end of the universe? What was the Sandman? I'm mixing a lot of things up, guys.
You sure are. Holy smokes.
Neil Gaiman. There was an inn.
the inn at the end of the world where we told stories.
Right. And so Hyperion is kind of that.
Yeah.
Canterbury Tales. Okay.
Yeah. It's,
and Canterbury
it's
Tales
the,
was that.
People on the way to planet and having had dealings with this weird creature that protected this planet.
Right. And if I remember correctly, the Shrike was terrifying. And I never read the second or third one. And he said that there's five. Or there's three and then there's two novellas.
It's
called Cantos.
Right.
But it was fascinating. And it was great to hear about somebody else like science fiction books that they love.
Yeah.
That I don't know that I would read, but they sound super sciencey and really kind of interesting. So it's a great
episode.
I've
always wanted to make a game from the Hyperion book.
Well, it sounds terrifying.
Where it's sort of, it's a board game plus Mad Libs, where you run around the board game collecting words to plug into your Mad Lib story about the time that you interacted with the Shrike before.
I have to move the mic. Well, I think we can leave it at that, you guys. And find Michael Brossard's at Monday Punday, his special, December 13th. It's on YouTube. He'll have an album out as well on all the places where you get a comedy album. And thanks for listening, everybody. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?